Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So today I'm going to be reviewing a quite recent book which came out in, it says here on Goodreads, published September 20th, 2016. So I'm only about three months late to this one. And it's called We Are Legion, We Are Bob, It's Bobbyverse Book 1. It's by Dennis E. Taylor, or Dennis Taylor. It seems like he's got two names here on Goodreads. Anyway, so this is a new book that was actually recommended a few places. I think someone had emailed me about it about a month ago, and then I saw on the SFBRP listener group on the thread there, books I'd like to see reviewed. Someone recommended it there, and then I think somebody else recommended it, so I thought, well, I'll just give it a go. Oh, I think Juliana said, oh, I think I might check this one out as well, so she added it to her to-read list. So this is one of those books where it's got spaceships on the front cover, and I'm like, okay, I downloaded the audiobook. I'm like, okay, science fiction, what kind of science fiction? I've been told it's like some quite good science, like hard science fiction, but also by the title, We Are Legion, We Are Bob, it sounds like a kind of a comedy book, like a funny book. Maybe it's going to be sort of like a, you know, sort of some kind of comic science fiction. Not entirely sure what I was to expect. However, it starts out, and pretty much just in the first, like, two paragraphs of the book, I kind of understood what the book was about. And so just so to make sure this isn't, like, massive spoilers, this is just from the blurb. It says, Bob Johansson has just sold his software company and is looking forward to a life of leisure. There are places to go, books to read, and movies to watch. So it's a little unfair when he gets himself killed crossing the street. So that's the first chapter. However, it actually opens up. The first few paragraphs are pretty much him saying, okay, so I've got all this money now that I've sold my software company, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that I want to do is freeze my brain or freeze my head or freeze my body when I die. And then in the future, when you can bring me back to life, I will be able to be immortal or live again in the future. And so that's what he does. And as he was saying that, I was like, oh, so that spaceship things is that he's going to be brought back to life and he's going to be, he's going to have some special skills being a software engineer, but also having his brain in a box, and he'll be able to go out into the world, out to the stars. And of course, because it's called We Are Legion, there's going to be different versions of him going out to the stars as this book continues on. And that is exactly what happens. That is pretty much what the story is about. It's about someone who gets brought back to life in the future, and they say, well, you know, we're going to use your, well, it's not brought back to life, but his brain is scanned in, and he's sort of brought back as software. And then they say, well, as software, we can copy you, and you're going to copy yourself as you spread to the stars. So the whole idea of a von Neumann machine that replicates itself and then goes on to the future, it's pretty obvious right from the very start of We Are Legion, We Are Bob, that that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. And it's right there in the blurb of the book on Goodreads. It's not very much a spoiler. That's what the book is about. Whereas I went into this not knowing that, but it was kind of like unfortunate in a way that I kind of guessed what the rest of the book was going to be about or what the story was going to be just from those first two or three paragraphs and knowing the front cover of the book. And I would have loved to have been more surprised than that, like there would be more to the book than this, but there isn't actually a whole lot more to the book than this. It starts off, and it seems like it's going to be a series, because this is just Bobbyverse number one, and the book ends, the book ends when the story doesn't really end, so you're just like, oh, well, there's going to be more of this. And unfortunately, for the book and for the rest of the review, that's all there is, really, to this book. It's a one good idea. Someone freezes his brain, gets back, brought back to life later on, is installed in a spaceship, a self-replicating spaceship, and sent out to explore the universe. And all, like, everything that happens from there on, you would just go, well, I've read science fiction before, I know what this is, I know what this story is, I kind of get this. Unfortunately, the book doesn't do anything more. There's some fun stuff that happens along the way, but that is just knowing that idea of the story. If I was to say, well, what kind of things would happen? Like the stuff that you could just come up with just knowing science fiction or just having a brain working out yourself, that's pretty much all you really get for the book. So the rest of the book is like, well, the story is simple. I've read House of Suns by Alistair Reynolds before. I kind of get the idea of a personality or a single entity splitting itself up into multiple copies, spreading out to the stars, and then meeting itself again in the future, and keeping itself up to date and having different the same person or the same personality spread around different places. This is not that new. That it's got a funny title called We Are Legion, We Are Bob, and it's the Bobbyverse. Like, what else are we going to bring to it? And so it really comes down to, like I say, like, the idea is in the front cover of the book and the title of the book and the first chapter of the book. Then it's just down to execution. And is this execution worth reading? And for me, I mean, I got to the end of it, but no, it really isn't, because it's not very good storytelling. For a start, there is this massive, massive plot hole, which I'm sure it's some of these times now that I kind of read a book or watch a TV show or watch a movie, and I'm like, there's a massive plot hole there, but it's such a massive plot hole that isn't being addressed. Did I just miss the reason why that plot hole wasn't addressed? So when he comes back to life at the beginning of this book, There isn't just one. Again, I don't need to get into it, because this is, like I say, if you don't want the spoilers, too many spoilers, I'm not going to get into too many of the exact details of what happens later on in this book. But there isn't just one nation, one country, which is trying to send out self-replicating machines to the stars. There's actually like three or four, I think, that may or may not be doing it, and so it's a race, and you get set off for a race first, and who can get to it? It's like, oh, we could go to the nearest star, but there might not be anything there, but if we get to the nearest star, we can still start replicating earlier on, and then spread to other stars, and then replicate, and then go that way. Or we can go to a slightly distant star, where we won't get there first, but it's a little bit further out, and we'll be able to, spread more, because it's closer to other stars. And I'm like, okay, this sounds good, that if you're going to have a von Neumann machine, self-replicating machine race, you want to start the race as soon as possible. The number of years that it takes you to get to the other stars. To be honest, it's not that far, because there's some kind of hand-wavium drive that they do, and because everything is software and small machines, it's not like they're having to transport humans from star to star. And so acceleration isn't a problem, and fuel isn't so much of a problem. So you can get to the different stars very quickly if the intelligence is just in software, which is all great. But so you're gonna zip around, you're gonna zip somewhere else, and then start replicating. None of the countries or none of the self-replicating people go, ah, okay, what we could do to get a good head start is, instead of going across to Alpha Centauri or across to, whatever these other different systems are, instead of going there and then starting the self-replicating race, why don't we just go, like, pop over to some asteroids in the asteroid belt in our solar system, and then start replicating there and just get like a massive head start. And then, instead of getting to Alpha Centauri first and then starting to spread to different stars from there, why don't we just spread to all of the different stars here? And that's never questioned, and it's never came up. And then we're like, oh, we need to get back to Earth. We need some news about what's happening on Earth. Okay, let's send someone back to Earth. And I'm like, why didn't you just self-replicate once, at least once in the solar system, and then head off? And so that was one massive plot hole. And I think there was another big plot hole later on. Did I make a note of it? No, I maybe didn't make a note of it. But there was that big plot hole, and then like one or two others. So I'm just like, but why? Like, if you're gonna just graph it out on a bit of paper, like, okay, what's the best way to take over the universe for your country with your self-replicating machine? What would you do? Like, if time and if location isn't a thing. Anyway, it's just one of those things. I was just like, this whole story doesn't make any sense. Like, this is a massive plot hole. Did I miss something? Maybe I missed something. Maybe there was a rule that said, oh, okay, you're not allowed to do any self-replicating in the solar system. But even at the start of this book, he goes, well, I'm going to take a detour. And it's really important that I get away as quickly as possible. But I'll just take a detour to Saturn. Like, why didn't he just drop a copy of himself off in Saturn and do that same thing in the carry-on? I mean, I know it takes a little bit of time, but like, or maybe it's not wasn't safe and they could be stopped in the solar system. But when you read the book, you're like, well, it's just not even addressed anyway. So, as I said, the story, it's sort of like, if we know the story, then you've got it just comes down to the storytelling, and it just seems to be full of the plot holes. There are some fun scenes in this thing, and there's some fun ideas that go through, but one of my big issues of this is that, like I say, it's just not written very well. It's trying to have like a light tone, so it's all written in first person. Oh, then I did this, and then I copied myself, and other Bob said this, and Bob number one said this, and that, again, it could be fun to do that, but almost as soon as you get the different Bobs, oh, let me just go back. So at the start, once he's brought back to life, he says, oh, you've actually got this blocking emotional blocker in place. And so you're like, oh, that kind of makes sense, because when he was a human, we didn't really see that many emotions anyway. He went to like a Star Trek convention or some kind of science fiction convention, and then he died. So we didn't really get to know him very well as a human. You know, he had some interaction with some co-workers or something, which I guess was meant to show that he's kind of human or whatever and likes people. But he's a bit of a loner, so we don't really get to know him that well. And then he becomes, software. And he's got this emotion suppressors on to make him more efficient. It's not like, well, you could be all upset about this, but this blocks you. And you could be all, you could do this, and you could be happy here, and you could have these peaks and troughs. So let's just kind of smooth you all out. And so at one point then, it doesn't really feel very human, not very relatable, but because he's software, and you're like, okay. And then at one point, he presses the button, which unsuppresses his emotions. And what happens when that, you know, what happens to him when that, when he presses that button, is like, he goes, oh, and I cried a bit because, you know, everyone I used to know is dead. And now on with the story. And he doesn't change at all. Like, there is no, like, Bob, you don't really see him coming to terms with anything. And then he was exactly as he was before he turned off all his emotions. And I was like, okay, is there a storytelling reason for that? No, it's just, again, it's just not, a character is not very well written. And then when he splits himself up into lots of multiple personalities, you'd think that, oh, okay, so what we're going to do is they're going to be very similar at the start to each other. And then as they have more experiences separately, that will develop their personalities in different ways. Like you can see with other stories where you have people copied and their minds copy, and you sort of see the slow separating out, divergent is what I'm trying to say, but divergenting of different, personalities. Like I say, in Alistair Reynolds' House of Suns, that happens a lot, and you know, there's lots of these different kind of things, and you kind of want to see that development. And I thought that's what the Bobbyverse was going to be. We're going to get one base character, which is this character, and then as he splits into different characters, he's going to go in these different ways, and we're going to see that development over time. However, that isn't how it happens. That development takes about a minute for each one of these things, and then they just have different personalities. And this Bob has got this personality and calls himself Bill, and then this one is calls himself, you know, Nigel, and has got this personality, and this one here is called Steve, and that one's got this kind of personality. But I'm like, why do these different characters have different personality? And you know what? Never explained. Some are more likable, some are not more likable. Some are more friendly and some are less friendly. Some like just being by themselves and some don't. And it's sort of like someone just doing rolling the dice of a, you know, D&D character sheet kind of development. Like, nothing happens along the way to these different characters, these different versions of Bob, to make them more or less like anything. They just happen to be that way. And then when they interact, sure, it can be fun-ish, I guess, but there isn't any satisfaction, and Bob himself never really becomes more of an interesting character. What else have I got to do here? Oh yeah, and then, so things like putter along. Once it starts, you're like, okay, stuff happens. Again, I don't need to go into that. But then part of the way, like 30 minutes before the end of the book, suddenly there's this massive new story element which is introduced after kind of a long time of not a lot happening, or stuff happening, but like the plot isn't going any further forward. Like, nothing is happening overall to make me think, oh, Bob is going to go in a different direction, or Bob is going to make different choices, or there's going to be any conflict between the Bobs. Nothing like that happens for like two-thirds of the book. Like, after the first third, once the situation is set up, all the way through that second half of the book, it's just stuff happening. Bob is doing this over here, go over there, Bob's doing this over there, go over there, Bob's doing that over there, go over here, Bob's... And then right at the very end, it's sort of like, oh, massive new plot thing. And I'm like, 30 minutes before the end pretty much means that this is being set up for some sequel. And then nothing happens to that. And then the book ends and I'm like, great. So I don't even get the full story of Bob. It's sort of like Bobbyverse number one. You know why you call it Bobbyverse number one when the second book is not out yet? It's because you haven't finished the story and you probably don't know what's going to happen next. Unfortunately, you can kind of get all of this book from, like I say, read the first few chapters of the book and then just stop. And once, and then when Bobbyverse 2 comes out, or Bobbyverse 3, or Bobbyverse is finished, then read the full story, because you're not getting the full story here. After about a third of the way through the book, the story just stops. So, like I say, from a character point of view, or from a story point of view, not a very good book. Like I say, it's not devoid of fun. I did mostly listen to this on a plane when I was quite tired, and just finished it off yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was. You know, it's like, it's fun science fiction-y kind of stuff. But, and here's, brings me on to the next thing about this, all it is fun science fiction-y kind of stuff. Because that's all it, I mean, I know it's weird to say, but that, it feels like that is all the author. Let's quickly look up his name again. That's all that Dennis Taylor, Dennis E. Taylor, that's all that he felt like doing. The book isn't about anything else. It's all it is about is a fun setup, and then it is about, let's have fun science fiction adventures. It's Star Trek fan fiction. And that might sound a bit damning, or might sound a bit dismissive, but that is what it is. Because that is what the character and the author wants it to be. They're going, let's set up a place where I can have me as a... it said here somewhere, I didn't copy it, but it sort of says, Dennis E. Taylor says, oh yes, I'm a science fiction fan and a software writer or engineer, computer engineer, computer science, whatever it is. Like, okay, so what he's done is he's written himself, I mean, there's no problem with this, it's a first novel, it's a self-published novel or whatever, and there's no problem with this, that you just go, okay, I want to put myself into Star Trek, but I don't want to just kind of say, what if I was a person and Star Trek existed and I had my own ship and could go around and have science fiction adventures? You know, you could write yourself like that and people go, is this you? It's like, yeah, but it's not really me. It's kind of like a future version. But what you do is, if you can freeze your current brain now as a software engineer and send yourself into the future and literally have these Star Trek adventures, what would you do if you did that? And that's what the story is about. It's about someone who is a Star Trek and Star Wars fan, a science fiction nerd, who sends himself into the future and has Star Trek adventures. And again, it's sort of like, what is this book about? It's like, well, it's a Star Trek nerd who gets the powers to go out and explore the galaxy, to boldly go where people haven't gone before, no man has gone before, whatever it is. And he's written it in a way, in a clever way, to put himself, or to put someone very much like him, Bob, whatever, very neutral name, to put a nerd, a science fiction and software computing nerd, into the future to have fun in a Star Trek exploring the universe and finding different planets. And you know, there's whole discussions like, oh, are we going to do the Prime Directive? Are we going to call ourselves the Federation? You know, all of the references, like if you actually said to a science, to a Star Wars, like a Trekkie or Trek or whatever, it's just to go, or Star Trek or Star Wars person, what would you do if you were going to the future? Oh, well, I would consider, are we going to do the Prime Directive, or are we not going to do the Prime Directive? And you go, well, are you or not? Well, okay, let's do it. You'd expect them to have that conversation. And if they were the only person, or they were going to have a conversation with another version of themselves, they would have that conversation. And then that's what we have in the story. And so what we have, like I say, is it's like this self-congratulatory nerd fiction, because that's like a different thing about all the pops, the science fiction popular references and things. But there is this kind of, you know, like... If you're gonna say, well, how do I get to the future and do this? This is a good version of that. And so that's where all the stuff that I enjoyed about this book, which is just sort of like, well, just let's have some science fiction adventures and go to different planets and explore them, and you know, and talk about relativity and faster than light travel, all that stuff. Yeah, it's fine, and it is all fine, but it doesn't add anything more than just, well, we're just gonna do some Star Trek stuff again, but with me in the main character, me as the main character. And you might think I'm being a bit hard, or maybe reading too much into it. No, I'm not, because this really is. Like, I just made, so as I was going through, I made some notes about what was going on. So for one of the first things, it says, oh, this thing looked at me, and it looked like the robot in Short Circuit. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And then they said, this person looked like the scary guy from Poltergeist 2. And then I made my software assistant, look like Admiral Akbar. That was actually quite a funny moment where he says, oh, this person, he had this assistant or this captain on the bridge, and And the audiobook narrator went, "Hor, hor, hor," and I was like, "Oh, that's Admiral Akbar." And then, like, a few seconds later, it said, "I made my assistant look like Admiral Akbar." And I was like, you know, that worked really well as an audio joke, but then it's explained to you. A lot of the chapters are started by panels from sci-fi conventions, sort of like, this is from this science fiction or, you know, exploring the galaxy, blah, 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 all these little chapter headings and stuff like that. And So that's, you know, those are the different kind of things that in the same way that Ready Player One didn't do any of the work of building characters itself or building a world itself. It would just go, and this was like this from this movie here. And you're like, you didn't put the work into that. All you're doing is naming something that this thing is like and then saying, yeah, I'm not going to describe this character. Just imagine this character is playing this role. And you go, okay, that's fine up until that point. But then when he starts naming his different characters, Bob starts naming different versions himself. He starts naming them. It's sort of like, well, I'm Bob, and number, and the second person to name himself, well, I'll just be Bill. And then number two, but there's also number two, which is the second copy, or the first copy or something. It's sort of number two. And he's like, well, I'm going to be Riker, because number two, Picard is number one, and then Riker is number two. So a lot of the book, like a third of all the chapters in the end, is following Riker around having adventures. And I'm like, but what? Like, the Riker isn't your character. You didn't create this character. You're just saying this person is Riker, and he doesn't have a beard, but then is it Riker without a beard, or what's this kind of thing? And then two characters go down somewhere, and they're like, oh, well, we've got to kind of influence some development. Maybe we should make something, you know, like a black thing, which is 1x4x9, you know, and just lower it down there and use that. And it's sort of like, you're just riffing on 2001, and then the characters go, oh, well, we can't just steal this idea from 2001. I'm like, you're doing that now. And at one point someone says, all their base belong to us, and then Homer Simpson gets stuff like that. And then the different planets that they go to, it was like, oh, this is the star system where there's Vulcan, so I'm going to call this planet Vulcan, and this Romulan. These two planets here are Vulcan and Romulan. And so all the way through, they're naming things after Star Trek characters and Star Trek things and Star Wars and all these other different things. There was And then at one point it just says, oh, and then we saw this spaceship. And all I can say, the best description that I can give, is that it looked like the alien ship from Prometheus. And I'm like, okay, that works because I saw Prometheus. But please, 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 please don't bring up Prometheus in my brain if you want me to have any good feelings towards you at all. Second, if I haven't seen Prometheus, I don't know that reference. If I haven't seen Short Circuit, I don't know that reference. You know, if you didn't know anything about Star Wars on Star Trek, this book is just... it's just blather. It's just, there's just nothing going on. There was a few times when it kind of it could work. You know, there was once, then they said, he says, oh, and this person was talking, and I was reminded of Bill Paxton's character from Aliens. And I was like, okay. And then, later on in that chapter, a bit later, he says, maybe not Bill Paxton, maybe Michael Bane. And I was like, you know, okay, that works as a joke. You added, instead of just, bringing in a reference to kind of do your hard work for you, to write the story, to actually make characters that mean anything to me yourself, or to make locations or spaceships that mean anything to me, that I can actually picture in my head, rather than just substituting in, you know, copying, pasting references and characters and planets and aliens and stuff from our popular culture. You know, it was sort of like, oh, there was a character moment there, but it only comes if you know Aliens enough to know the difference between Michael Bane's character and Bill Paxton's character. So yeah, all the way through, the book is doing very, 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 very little work to create any world, and it's just going, oh, all their base belong to us. And you're like, he says, and we were launching this spaceship, and it made me feel like it does when they launch the new starships in Star Trek. And I'm just like, you can't just do this. And then someone else says, oh, like someone, assistant in the future says, oh, I tried to catch up on popular culture from the 21st century so I could understand and interact with you. And he just says, oh, just watch Star Wars and Star Trek, and that is enough. And I'm just like, really? Is this the level? And then when I actually read the rest of the book, I was like, yeah, this is science fiction written from people who only know Star Wars, Star Trek, maybe Aliens and Prometheus, a bit of 2001. All their base belong to us. And there's just nothing. There's nothing else in here. There's no. It's like science fiction written for people who've never read a science fiction book before, which isn't either fan fiction of Star Trek and Star Wars, a Star Wars or Star Trek novelization, or no, that's it really. It's just like the most basic storytelling and the most basic Star Trek. However interesting the first idea is, and you're like, oh, this could be interesting. Nope, it's just science fiction, sci-fi stuff. However, if you're going to write about someone, and this is the thing that really annoyed me, is if you're going to write about a science fiction fan, TV science fiction movie and TV fan who goes to the future, who's probably never read a science fiction book before, or he certainly doesn't reference any science fiction books in this book, you'd think that, oh, okay, so in the future, he has now got an extra 200 years or 130 years or whatever it is of more science fictional, science fiction output to go. Like, we know that right now they are making new science fiction movies. Some of them are new Star Trek movies. Some of them are new Star Wars movies. Some of them are new Star Trek TV series. I think there's some of them coming up in the future. So if I was to die today and came back 130 years in the time, and my entire personality, like literally everything, like the name I'm going to name myself if I go out and replicate myself, and all of the references that I make when I'm telling my future story, if it's all going to be science fiction, Star Trek, Star Wars stuff, what would be one of the first things that I did when I came back in 130 years' time? I'd be like, hey, you know, Star Wars, there's episodes 4, 5, and 6. And then they made episodes 1, 2, and 3. And then they made number 7, and I saw that one. And I heard there was going to be, like, this Rogue One movie coming out, which wasn't in the main thing. But then I died, and I didn't see that. You know, can I start there? Like, just say, hey, what order shall I watch these in? Shall I watch them now from now on chronologically? Or should I watch them in the way that they were put out? And when should I watch the TV shows, you know? And, you know, if this comes out, there's a crossover into this thing here. Like, all of those different cool things that you could have written about. Like, hey, what happens? What happens in the future of the next generation? Like, after next generation, like, what happens then? Or are we going back and is everything happening in the alternate timeline of, you know, Star Trek 2009? All of those different questions that you could ask and different things sort of like, oh, what's canon now or what's not canon? Should I stick with a new canon? Like, this is 130 years time of all these different discussions in the future. None of that happens at all. It turns out Bob, who comes back in the future, even though he's a massive Star Trek fan and a massive Star Wars fan, has literally zero curiosity about any science fiction that takes place after 2016. And of course, the reason is that the author of this book, which I'll just look at beginning, Dennis E. Taylor, isn't good enough. All he can do is write slightly, you know, through a weird lens fan fiction about being a Star Trek fan in a Star Trek world and exploring different things. That's all he can do. But he's not actually good enough or clever enough to write future, like to even posit what's going to happen in the future of Star Wars or Star Trek. Because that would be a great thing to say. Like, you could just say, oh, and then this happened. Oh, yeah, and this Gene Roddenberry died, but then other people did this, and then all this kind of stuff. And then he could just go, right, and then in the future of Star Trek, and he could just lay out what he wanted to see. But he's not going to do that, because he knows if he did that, it would upset people who actually are really passionate about Star Trek and wouldn't want that to do. Because he doesn't have the convictions, he doesn't have the strength of his convictions to actually just say, in the future of Star Trek, this is going to happen. Or in the future of Star Wars, this is going to happen. And it's a real pity, because that could be an interesting thing, to be a Star Trek fan, coming back in the future and then discovering, oh yeah, actually, there was new laws passed and said, we're all going to be a religious extremist country, and Star Wars is outlawed, and Star Trek is outlawed, and that's it. And then, oh, well, that could have been an interesting thing. What would it be like to live in a super religious future society where Star Trek and Star Wars and these other science fiction things are now like the underground resistance literature about, oh, yes, it's about rising up and being a rebel and doing this kind of stuff. You know, all of that could have been in this book. But it wasn't. It wasn't in this book, because it's not clever enough to do that. And just in case you think I'm hammering this point a little bit too much, literally the last line of the book was, Vulcan now had Vulcans. Roddenberry would be proud. If you're going to end your story, if you're going to end your whole novel with Roddenberry would be proud, I would suggest writing something that Roddenberry would have been proud of, or at least Star Trek fans would have been proud of. And all this book is kind of, like I said, it's just self-congratulatory nerd fiction in a way that, oh, if you get all the references in this book, you'll be happy. And you'll know that you got all the references of this book, because when I make a reference, I'm going to literally name the source work as I make the reference and say the title of the thing that I am referencing. Hey, who knows? I've not seen a lot of Star Trek TV shows or anything like that. There's probably lots of references that I didn't get in this. But pretty much, but I don't know where they would be, because every single other time that he made a reference, he named it as he went through. This is from this movie, this is from this TV show, and there was this thing here as well, and there was one character when he says, oh, and this character is named Homer. And I was like, you know, this could be a really interesting way. What Homer is this going to be named after? Is this Homer going to be someone like who maybe wrote an Odyssey? Is this going to be a clever reference to the 2001 Space Odyssey and then original Odyssey written by Homer? Nope, Homer Simpson even puts on the stupid voice and has a cartoon avatar. And I'm like, great, that's fine. So what else have I written here? So, oh yeah, I remember the one of the other. Oh no, it's gone again. I had another massive plot hole that I was going to mention, and it was in my head for 1 second. I mentioned it before, and now it went back in for 1 second. But as I got to the sentence, I'd forgotten what it is again. Maybe I'll remember it. So yeah, I like. So in a way, this is kind of a post Ready Player One science fiction. You go, okay, Ready Player One is a story which just wore all of its references right on its sleeve, just went, okay, I'm not going to make clever references. Unlike, say, maybe Alistair Reynolds in Terminal World, where that's a story about Mars, but it never mentions Mars, but it's also a story about Mars fiction, and it goes through the history and references lots of fiction, science fiction novels that have been set on Mars. But if you don't get any of those references, it's still just a fun Mars science fiction steampunky airship adventure story. But if you do get them all, and you do get lots of references because you have read lots of books about there, that it still works as a story. Whereas Ready Player One doesn't work as a story if you don't like the references or you don't get the references. There's nothing else there if you don't get the references. I do think this book, We Are Legion, We Are Bob, is better than Ready Player One in that regard, because there is a story there. It doesn't completely rely on it. It's sort of like, I'm going to tell a story and I'm going to sprinkle in these references. It's not like this is a story about the references. It's not quite that bad, but it definitely feels like, oh, this is a little, you know, I put a little frowny face in my notes here when I put post-Ready Player One fiction. It's just like, I hope this doesn't infiltrate the rest of fiction. And I don't think it will. It'll infiltrate other self-published first novels, I think, is an easy way to do, is so, because you don't have to put the work in yourself, but this works. So what else have I got? Oh yeah, and I made a note here, Stranger Things. I recently finished, like a few days ago, finished Stranger Things, a TV show on Netflix. And I was really worried that that was going to be post-Ready Player One nerd 80s references. And it felt a little bit like that. It did tone it down as it went through. But again, it did all the work it needed to do its own thing. If you didn't get all the references, there's a few times when the characters themselves say, oh, this isn't a good deal, Lando Calrissian or whatever he says. And there's a few other things where you just go, okay, that works. They're saying, oh, this is a bit like this, but you understand it that they're kids in the 1980s and those things are going to be a big thing. And I thought some of the references that you see, like they'll be a poster on the wall and it's amazing, and they'll reference some music, and it's like, yeah, those are all the amazing movies that held up until today and the music that we still listen to today. I'm sure kids in the 1980s were, their main popular references would have been TV shows that we wouldn't even want to admit to watching now. But no, they only do the amazing 1980s popular cultures that they are on the screen. So it was fine. But like I say, it did enough that, like, when at the end, when they're trying to defeat the main bad monster with a slingshot, I was like, okay, I know, I've seen the movie or the TV miniseries or whatever it was, It, Stephen King's It, so I get what's going on here in one way, but it did more than that. And I think a TV show can do that. It's because the characters are there. It's got multiple people writing on the script. It's got loads and loads of people all putting the work in to make it more than just a collection of references. Whereas I think if someone's writing a first novel and a self-published novel, they're not going to put all that work into it. And so hopefully Ready Player One style stuff is going to stay within first novels by self-published authors. And not kind of creep out into the wider world of science fiction and not infect the rest of science fiction is an easy way to get good feelings with other people. So while I have ranted on about this for a long time and I've mostly said bad, or I've brought out the things that I didn't like about this, remember that if you do just like fun science fiction, space opera, exploring the planet, sci-fi stuff, this is fine. And it's nothing, there's nothing offensive in it. And it's fine if you can kind of filter out the stuff that you don't like. So it all comes down to like a 2-star, 2.5-star book, like really kind of mediocre. Let's give it 2 stars. It's kind of like a mediocre version of better stories that I've seen before. And a good attempt at a fun idea, but the storytelling isn't there. And then what makes up for the storytelling, what makes up for the lack of characters by just naming other characters and going, oh, it's like this person, oh, it's like that person. Like the scary guy from Poltergeist 2. I've never seen Poltergeist 2. I don't know who the scary guy is in Poltergeist 2. What's my last note here? Oh, yeah, so 2 stars. But, okay, so let's do the Audible ad. This I listened to as an audiobook, and you can get this audiobook for free by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And if you do that, you can sign up for a free trial and you get for a 30-day free trial and you get a book and it's yours for life for free if you stick with it. You can either listen to it within 30 days and if you don't, or you can sign up for a plan and any book that you have is good to go. If you don't like a book, so if I wanted to return this book, I'm not going to return this book, but if I didn't want to do it, once you sign up for a plan, if there's any book that you start listening to and you don't like it for any reasons, you can just say, hey, I don't like this book. This book isn't for me. I want to give my credit back and get another credit for this month. And Audible says, you know what? Fine. Go for it. No problem at all. Which is very nice of them. Audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Sign up for a free trial. Stick with the trial like I do and enjoy audiobooks into the future. The audiobook narration, let's actually go quickly across to Audible, the Audible app here, and let's see what I can find. It was about, I never actually said how long this book was. It was, it never actually says it properly. What's it? What do I need? View book details. So about 10 hours of audiobook, I guess, which is pretty good. Narrated by Ray Porter, who did mostly a fine job. Didn't have a lot to work with, but did pretty well. However, there was one name that he said that I wasn't quite sure. They name one character who is a very clever technical person. They name the character Archimedes. I was thinking Archimedes, but it always says Archimedes. And I'm thinking, is that right? Is Archimedes the right pronunciation of that? And I'm like, maybe it is, because there's lots of those different Greek names, which I just don't know the exact like stresses on things, but I've always said Archimedes, and I don't think I've ever heard it not Archimedes, but this was Archimedes. Archimedes, and as it was being repeated over and over again, I'm like, am I going crazy? Is it Archimedes? So if you've listened this far in this podcast, tell me, send me a message to at Luke Burridge on Twitter, or email me luke@juggler.net. Is it Archimedes or is it Archimedes? Which way have you heard it? Both ways? I've not. And it was just one of those things that as I was going through the book, I was just like, I don't really, is this correct? And the other thing, talking about different languages, is that a lot of the planets and stars that these characters would go to, they didn't use names like, you know, you go, oh, okay, Alpha Centauri, everyone knows Alpha Centauri, but then there's loads of other names which are all kind of like Beta Sumdili, and then Satan Bathili, and then Delta Manili, and it's like, and so many of these names were a little bit too close together, and I was like, oh, that was the Greeky sounding one, I guess. And this was this one, and this is this. And but it, only when Bob in the Bobbyverse named the different planets, oh, these are the Deltons, and I was like, okay, I know who Deltons are now. Oh, and then we renamed this one. This is going to be the Vulcan system, and I was like, okay, Vulcan, right? Going to do it that way because I can't keep track of all those different names. Maybe if I knew Star Trek better, I would get these references because some of the planets that they go to are literally the planets that then star systems that they go to in the Star Trek movies and TV shows, but I didn't get them. But I reckon if I was reading the book, I would have been able to keep track of these a bit better, but listening to it, it was a little bit tricky. Otherwise, all good, all fine, all good, no problem at all. Get the audiobook. I think that's it. Email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge there. And on Instagram, I'm @LukeBurridge. And on YouTube, if you want to follow along my recent vlogging about what I get up to on my work trips and my life as a professional juggler. I think some people might find that interesting. So check out my vlogging on YouTube. I'm Luke Burridge there too. Go over to sfbrp.com and check out the episode list, and you can see what books I have read in the past and reviewed in the past. I think I'm up to episode 319, so there's a lot of stuff to get through there. If you can't go that far back in the feed, I think there's only last 50 or 100 episodes in the feed. All of them are still there, available. Check out the episode lists, and there's links to the download files and blog posts there as well. You can sort by author, you can sort by star rating, sort by book title and episode number and all that kind of stuff. That's good. And also, become my friends on goodreads.com and sign up for the SFBIP listener group and join in the discussion. As you can tell, if you want me to read a book and review a book, one of the best ways to do it is to join in on the what books I'd like to see reviewed thread on the SFBRP discussion group there on goodreads.com. And email me, luke@juggler.net. Okay, that's it for me for this episode. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.